Well, welcome to the podcast. Don't forget, tomorrow's podcast comes on Saturday. It is a one-on-one interview for 90 minutes with Gavin McGinnis. It's Hold Your Sides Funny. It is a little outrageous, and it'll make you think. That's tomorrow's podcast. Also, on Blaze TV next week is a Ilhan Omar special. Next Wednesday, 5 p.m., an hour long on Ilhan Omar. You'll understand a little bit better on who she is and what she faces and what the media has completely ignored. All right, on today's podcast, Apollo 11 is a big topic of conversation. We start the show with that, and a Greek paradox. Looking at the Constitution and comparing it to the same kind of thing of the 50th anniversary with Apollo 11. We'll talk about that. Also, we strangely fell into the topic of the mark of the beast and AI. Bill O'Reilly joins us, has some really interesting things to say about Donald Trump and, quote, the squad. And we also want to help out a couple who have lost absolutely everything, a soldier of 30 years, because they were moving to Texas and they had to take the moving truck that the government provides. That truck burned down. They lost everything. Insurance only covers about a third of what they've lost. They have five kids, all their stuffed animals, everything was gone. It's a pretty amazing story, especially when you figure out how they found out about it. It's horrible. And you can get involved and help them. Also, don't you love socialism? Kamala's health care, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Patriot Mobile. Okay. Here we are talking about how people are using your money, using you, your product, you as a product, and none of us like it. Well, what about Patriot Mobile? Have you thought about your phone companies? Because your phone companies, AT&T, they're giving money hand over fist to Planned Parenthood. These phone companies are working against the things you believe. And so every time you use your phone, you're actually helping fund the fight for abortion. It's nuts. Now, you could say, well, I'm not going to use those. And then what are you going to do? Of course, you're going to use them because it's good service, right? So you need something that has great service, has a great price, will save you money, and will make it flawless and seamless to switch over. That is Patriot Mobile. They don't give their money to left-wing causes. These guys are patriots that believe in the Constitution. They have already supported with $2 million free speech just from starting this very small. They take some of their profits and they turn it in to, you know, Second Amendment, pro-life, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to get the same great service. You're going to save money. And this company actually is on your side. Please switch right now. PatriotMobile.com. Use the promo code Beck. You'll get a free month of service when you switch over. PatriotMobile.com/Beck. PatriotMobile.com. Promo code Beck. In 1638, poet John Milton met Galileo, who was elderly at the time, and on house arrest, just for the insistence that the Earth revolves around the sun. Milton was 30 at the time. Years later, he would include Galileo in his epic poem, Paradise Lost. He wrote, "By night, the glass, O Galileo, observes imagined land and regions in the moon." Galileo was the first human to study the moon through a telescope, and he used this new technology to view the lunar surface. For thousands of years, that's all we could do. We could spy on the moon. It was an impossible distance away. It was only 50 years ago, on July 20th, 1969, that Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong became the first humans to actually step foot on the lunar surface. It's only been 116 years since the Wright brothers invented the first successful airplane, and less than a century after the birth of aviation, humans made it to the moon.
The Eagle has landed.
Not only did Armstrong and Aldrin land on the moon, but they also returned safely with the third pilot, Michael Collins. They even went through customs at the Honolulu airport in Hawaii and jokingly filled out the entry form. They declared moon rocks and moon dust, and they reported that they had returned with no additional passengers.
President Nixon waving to the astronauts.
They were lucky to be alive. All three of them, but especially Armstrong and Aldrin. You see, after detaching from the command module while moving around the cramped cabin of the lunar module, one of the men accidentally dislodged a circuit breaker that controlled the engines. Then, 30,000 feet above the moon in rapid descent, the module's onboard computer began to send a signal of an alarm. The computer was overloaded for some reason. Each spaceflight only had two Apollo guidance computers. One was in the command module and the other in the lunar landing module. So you understand, an iPhone today has 100,000 times the processing power of a computer that guided Apollo 11 to the moon. That's enough memory to handle 120 million moon missions all at once from your phone. NASA, Mission Control, they were about 17 seconds away from aborting the mission because of the computer issue. But luckily, thanks to the brilliant work of young coders and engineers, the crisis was averted. The lunar module was dangerously low on fuel. It had only 216 pounds, which Armstrong and Aldrin needed for the ascent. If they had taken 26 seconds longer, Apollo 11 would not have landed. Now imagine, as you're landing, you get a low gas sign on your dashboard, just as you're landing on the moon, and knowing that if you run out of gas, there is no gas station, and there's no way for anyone to rescue you.
Now in the approach phase.
Now, Apollo 11's forgotten third pilot, Michael Collins, was tasked with remaining in the command module as Aldrin and Armstrong descended onto the moon. What happens if they don't make it back? A million disasters could have happened. Maybe they would crash, which they sort of did. Maybe the clunky spacesuit would fail. Maybe they would be affected by radiation. Maybe they would get lost, bobbling through the moon's uneven gravity. Maybe the lunar module wouldn't be able to launch. I mean, if anything went wrong, they were stranded. Maybe. Collins later said he had nightmares about it. That there he was, alone in space, slowly unraveling, literally facing the dark side of the moon. In an interview later with the New York Times, he said, "I'm not going to commit suicide. I was coming home by myself, and Aldrin and Armstrong knew that. I mean, I didn't have to discuss it with them. They didn't have to discuss it with me. But it would not have been a good trip home." The scientists at NASA had considered every single possibility, including these ominous outcomes. In fact, President Nixon had asked his speechwriter, William Safire, to write a speech and a contingency plan in the event of a tragedy, the Lunar Disaster Plan speech. 30 years later, Safire said in an interview, "If they couldn't do it, they'd have to be abandoned on the moon and left to die there. The men would either have to starve to death or they'd have to commit suicide." The White House knew if that happened, Armstrong and Aldrin would be on their own. NASA would have to cut off all communication, and Nixon would have to call the men's widows. Then he would solemnly read Safire's speech to the nation. That speech is gut-wrenching. I had never heard it before. It said, "Fate has ordained that the men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace. These brave men, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin, know that there is no hope for their recovery, but they also know that there is hope for mankind in their sacrifice. These two men are laying down their lives in mankind's most noble goal, the search for truth and understanding. They will be mourned by their families and their friends. They will be mourned by their nation. They will be mourned by the people of the world. They will be mourned by a Mother Earth that dared send two of her sons into the unknown. In their exploration, they stirred the people of the world to feel as one. In their sacrifice, they bind more tightly the brotherhood of man. The speech concluded with a note of triumph. Quote, "In ancient days, when men looked at the stars and saw their heroes in the constellations, they could not imagine that in modern times we do much the same, except our heroes are epic men of flesh and blood. Others will follow and surely find their way home. Man's search will not be denied, but these men were the first, and they will remain the foremost in our hearts. For every human being that looks up to the moon in the nights to come will know that there is some corner of another world that is forever mankind." Thankfully, we don't know the words of that speech. History played out differently. The lunar module didn't exactly land gracefully. The cabin wasn't properly depressurized, so when the lander detached, it shot out of the orbiter with enough force that the men landed 4 miles from their target, but they made it. The door opened and Neil Armstrong looked out at the landscape of gray mush. They had no idea what they were about to feel as he leapt from the ladder onto the moon.
"I'm going to step off the land now."
He spoke these immortal words. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. President Nixon then made the first ever presidential call to the moon and told the astronauts that the whole world was proud of them and that because of what you have done, the heavens have become part of man's world. Armstrong and Aldrin spent 21 hours on the moon. They ascended without any issues and returned from the command module, gritty from their time on the moon, much to the annoyance of Collins. It's no coincidence that NASA's moon missions were named after Apollo. A towering, complicated figure in ancient Greek mythology, Apollo was the god of music, poetry, and medicine, the patron of sailors, nurturer of the vulnerable, the god of light and sun and knowledge and truth. Apollo represents the best that we as humans can achieve, our human spirit, because we're always dreaming of the next impossible discovery. Before Apollo 11, humans had spent thousands of years desperate to find a way to launch themselves into space, or at the very least, they had intimately stared up at that gray rock above. Because on a quiet night, if the sky is clear enough, we all feel a certain kinship with the moon. And sometimes it looks so close. For whatever reason, we wound up here, on Earth, mostly stuck on land. Despite all of our certainty, we're still clueless about the universe surrounding us, including our own planet. We've only explored about 5% of our ocean. As for outer space, the more we learn about it, the more obvious it becomes that we're in way over our heads. There are 10 times as many stars in space than there are grains of sand on the Earth. The Sahara Desert is 3.5 million square miles of sand. And that's just one of our deserts. The Apollo 11 moon landing, truly one of our greatest achievements, not as a country, but as mankind.
It inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
But there is plenty left over to discover. We are only just beginning to understand our place in this universe. We have an infinite amount of learning to do.
We've come to the conclusion that this has been far more than 3 men on a voyage to the moon.
I guess it's time we all learn that there is no final frontier.
We feel that this stands as a symbol of the insatiable curiosity of all mankind to explore the unknown.
I wish I could remember which astronaut it was. I think it was on maybe 12 or Apollo 13 that was so calm. His nerves were such steel that he actually fell asleep on the launch pad. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine being strapped to a bomb and you're going to take off and you're going to the moon and you fall asleep, you're that calm? Hey, there's a Greek paradox. I'm sorry I don't remember the name of it, but it's the paradox of a ship. If you leave the harbor and you have all of the replacement parts for your ship in the hull of the ship, and you leave harbor, but as you're sailing, you replace each board with a new board. Is it the same ship that you left with? Is it the same ship if you replace it slowly? Now you would say yes. Yeah, it's the same ship. Okay, I replaced it part by part. However, if it's in a museum, it's an old ship, and somebody wanted to steal that ancient ship, and they knew they couldn't just take it out all at once, they'd get caught, and they came up with an idea, why don't we just steal it one board at a time, and we'll make replacement boards, and we put the replacement in one piece at a time. Who has the real ship? When they're done, is it the same ship? It's a paradox that they've been talking about since we were making up stories about the moon and moon gods. But I want you to think, 50 years ago, we went to the moon. 50 years ago. I don't remember the moon landing, but I remember the excitement, and I remember my t-shirt that I wore. But Stu remembers the Challenger explosion. So his experience of the space program, it wasn't the excitement of Apollo that I experienced. It was the tragedy of Challenger. Now, the reason why I say this, and I want to point out our two experiences with the space program, is because it was in 1826 that it was the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And both Adams and Jefferson died July 4th, 1826, on the 50th anniversary. That'd be like Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin dying today within an hour of each other. That's how remarkable that was. But the people that were our age, my age and Stu's age, one might not have remembered July 4, 1776, but could remember the excitement of the time. The other, their experience would probably be the War of 1812. They both remembered different Americas. I remember the America before 9/11. Stu remembers that, but my children don't. And as we have gone along, we keep changing different boards in this ship we call America. We keep replacing its parts. Are we even the same ship? It's a paradox. I'm not sure we are. Because we're not the same crew. We're not the same. We don't have the same planks. So what does it require to be able to claim, yeah, this is the same ship? A renewal of our mission statement. That all men are created equal, endowed by their creator, and governments are instituted among men to protect those rights.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. You know, I saw a poll today where most Americans don't think the moon landing changed their life at all. Really didn't. It wasn't really worth it. It didn't really affect. It didn't really affect us really at all.
Nah, it didn't.
You have no idea. Let me give you just some of the things that came from the moon launch. baby formula. Baby formula. They needed to figure out how to get nutrition into a liquid form, and that's the beginning of baby formulas. Your computer mouse. That was coming from the space program. Believe it or not, comfortable running shoes. You notice our shoes are very different than the Converse we had in the 60s. That's because they had to make a molding process for the helmets that the astronauts wore. And they had to take this rubber and form it inside of the helmet. And they realized, wow, that could work for shoes.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. Cell phone and cell phone cameras. The camera technology that we now have in your iPhone that was originally designed for the space program, so you could have cameras. The microwave oven. We also have ice-resistant airplanes. So when you have icing, if we wouldn't be flying in the winter if it wasn't for the space program. You also have scratch-resistant lenses. Those were a product of the space program. Safer highways. As they were trying to figure out, how do we land some of these things when we got to the space shuttle? How do we land this? They were very concerned. Remember, flying, landing the space shuttle is like a flying brick. You're just falling. It's controlled. It's a controlled crash. There's not much you can do. And so you're traveling at this high rate of speed, and they were afraid that if there was anything on the tarmac, if there was any kind of dust, rain, anything, that thing could slide right off of the tarmac. So they invented the grooved pavement. If you've ever lived in Seattle, you have most of your traffic accidents that didn't happen, you have NASA to thank for it. Water filtration, survival blankets, invisible braces originally developed for NASA for use in missile tracking, Tempur foam if you've ever had a Tempur-Pedic bed. That Tempur foam comes from NASA.
Can we back up just for just a second?
Yeah.
You said NASA is responsible for survival blankets? The thing they're wrapping those poor children that have been separated from their families on the border in? So NASA's responsible
NASA's
for this.
Responsible.
Unbelievable.
Racist. Yeah. So anyway.
GPS technology? I can't get around without it.
No. Nobody knows how to use a map.
I would never get around anyway. I couldn't get home this afternoon without it.
Think about without GPS, because I don't. I use GPS on everything. I used to be, remember how good I used to be on just navigating around? You could drop me in any city and I could be like, it's that way. Now I'm completely lost. I have no idea where I'm at any time.
In the DFW, I have no idea because I always use GPS.
Yeah.
And so you don't learn it.
Not good.
No, it's not. Probably not good.
Do you remember when I was talking to Ray Kurzweil and I said he was talking about how you're going to interface with the internet, something that Elon Musk just introduced this week, but you're going to interface with the internet. And he said, you can upgrade. And I said, won't that make us weaker? Because we won't have to really learn anything. Won't that make us weaker? And he said, no, it'll make us stronger. I wish I would have thought of the GPS example. Because I'm much weaker on directions now.
For sure.
Another example I would give is spelling. There was a time in which, you had to learn how to spell. Now you kind of you type in the general word into Google. It pops up. You're like, oh, that's how you spell it. And you change it. You're typing an email and it just auto-corrects the way you're spelling it.
But it also makes you a quitter. Because after about three times of trying to spell the word, and it won't give you a suggestion, you change the word.
That's the ultimate failure. That ultimate failure moment.
When you can't get close enough for Google to try to figure out what you're trying to write.
That's bad.
I went on vacation last week, and I have a scale at home. And the scale is one of these like Wi-Fi scales that like, you know, you get on it and it tell, you know, it like records your weight over time, which is that. What you see a freaking roller coaster ride over the past.
Is it the one when Jeffy gets on, it says one at a time,
yes,
please?
Yes, it's that one.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I went on vacation and when I came back, it didn't recognize me as the same person because it assumes when you step on it. Like it's just like, okay, well, this person weighs 100 pounds and now they're 102, so it must be that person. It like categorized, like my kid, when Zach steps on it, he's like, what, 50 pounds, and then he's 52 and it knows it's Zach. I gained so much weight that it was like, who's this person?
Shut up.
Like, who the hell is this?
Really?
And then I swear, and I don't know about this part of it, but then I brought it home and on the day I flew back from the airport, I put my iPhone up to my face and it would not do the Face ID. I'm like, did I get so fat my iPhone can't recognize me anymore? Is that possible?
I gotta tell you, I have the face recognition thing.
Yeah.
It won't ever recognize my face. I like hold it up, it says camera is covered. I'm like, camera's not covered. Doesn't recognize face. I'm like, it's me. It's me.
Oh, wait, that's your face covering the camera.
That's right. Yeah.
It could be the same problem.
It could be. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, and I was thinking today about how the mark of the beast, you know, I get up and take a shower and I'm thinking about the mark of the beast.
Obviously.
I was actually thinking about technology, which led me to the Elon Musk thing. And would I take that? Would I want my daughter to have that? Because she'll be a candidate for that.
Yeah.
And it will change her. And then I thought, look at the benefits of that. And then that's where I started the mark of the beast. I'm like, injected into your head. No, that's not forehead, so it probably wouldn't be that. And then I started thinking about the people in Sweden that are putting it underneath their hand right now. There's 4,000 people now that have put that little grain of rice thing that gives you access to everything. You don't have to have ID. You don't have to have money. Blah, 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 blah. And I thought, you know, I remember saying, there's no way I'm going to give the government my fingerprints. Never. Will I give the government my fingerprints? I'm going this week to, or next week, to the Department of Homeland Security or whatever it is to get Global Pass.
Oh, Global Entry?
Yeah, Global Entry, where you have to give them all your whole handprint.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all the...
It's fantastic.
I'm doing it for... I want the convenience.
Oh, it's going to save you a good 20 minutes in that line,
right.
And that's worth it.
Right. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I would have never given the government... But now, for convenience, I will. Mm. Next. No. Remember when we used to talk about face recognition and how bad that is?
Mm-hmm.
I just gave it to Apple.
Oh, yeah.
Who we know. I mean, all these guys are in bed with the government. This is not good. We know the walls are closing in, and we're like, yeah, let me give you my face print, too.
We're talking a good savings of a half second every time you log in.
Right.
So that adds up.
When it comes to the mark of the beast...
Jeez.
And you're implanting a chip because there is no other way to have money.
Right.
Everyone's going to do it. There's going to be such a small number of people, which then brought me to, I have got to teach the book of Revelation to my children because they didn't grow up with it like I did. I mean, I went to a Catholic school. They were like, and the devil is coming maybe tonight. And you're like, whoa, I'm four. Why do I have to learn this now? Now we really need to teach our children about those signs because it could happen.
How long was this shower? I mean, you remember like a month?
That was actually about 3 minutes.
No, I used to think the same thing because I remember hearing that story as a kid, the whole Mark of the Beast thing, and thinking to myself, like, wouldn't they just not do that then? All know this is a possibility, right?
Right.
And bad things are associated with it. So maybe like right before when they're like, oh, we're going to inject you, everyone would just say, well, no, remember the whole Bible thing? Like, we already talked about this.
We're losing that.
Oh, first of all, we're losing it.
Yeah.
And second of all, it is... We just don't think like it overwhelms us in slow spurts,
well,
right?
Because we assumed that the Mark of the Beast was going to be presented like... All right, you have to sign up for this or I'm going to kill you dead. But we didn't see the convenience factor coming.
Did anybody see that the president was vomiting pea soup and his head was spinning around? I don't think we should take this. It's not that way.
It's that, hey, this technology is great. In fact, it could save your children if they're ever kidnapped.
Yeah.
It comes with GPS in it and we'll be able to track down your kids and save them.
Try this out for size. Think of... think of the convenience and how right now, we know that China is closing the doors on their society. Mm-hmm. Google is part of it. Google is part of it. Mm-hmm. We also know all this surveillance technology is being built here in America, just not by the state. And yet we know that Facebook is silencing us. We know that Facebook is bad for us. We know that Google is really a dangerous company. It is.
And we just keep doing it.
And we just
we
keep
just get
doing
in
it.
Deeper and deeper. Do you remember the, did you watch the, you, I think you did watch Continuum, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Which it starts out in 2077 mm-hmm. in the future. And then they come back to 2012 through time travel. But the point of the future is that corporations have taken over and they are the government. And I used to think,
I used to
ridiculous. Come on. Corporations are going to be the government. Wow, are we headed in that direction or what?
Science fiction writers. So I've been reading a lot of science fiction lately, a lot. And I've even gone back to, right now I'm just reading Frankenstein. And going back and just seeing what, you know, why did Mary Shelley write Frankenstein? It was what was going on in her life. She was really a tortured soul. She had lost her daughter, I think. Really horrible things had happened. But she had attended a science show, if you will, that showed reanimation. And it just showed electricity and how they took a dead frog, attached electrodes to it, then, you know, generated some electricity, hit those electrodes, and the frog moved. Okay? And so it was her
didn't
saying...
Didn't snap back to life. It
didn't
just
snap
moved.
Back, yeah, just yeah. moved. Mm-hmm. And nobody had ever seen that before. And so the idea back then was science might be able to regenerate life. Okay, didn't have that, don't have that ability. But science, the same thing happened with we can create the perfect human back in the 40s and 30s with the Nazis. It didn't work. We now have the technology to do some of these things. So man has been mm-hmm. going down this road for a very, very long time. And science is just catching up to man's most terrific and horrific dreams. And it's here. It's really here this time. And I don't mm-hmm. think we're thinking about it because we're so distracted by... Oh, I got so many likes on Facebook.
Yeah. And we've just become used to all this stuff. I remember when I was in Houston and the toll tag thing was a big deal to Houston, to Texans. Like, I'm not getting that because they'll know wherever I am. They'll see that on the toll. They'll know where I am. They'll know my name and they'll know all my name. And now we give up our information so quickly and so easily.
Oh, yeah.
We don't even think about it anymore.
You know, and nobody is talking in Congress about protecting our information. That one of the biggest things that could be done right now and should be done is that you are in charge. You are the only owner of any information that that is on you. So in other words, any Facebook or anybody else collecting things, you have access to it and you can say, dump it. It's mine. That's me. That's part of me.
It's the way it should be.
It's the way it should be. But we're not demanding it. We're allowing people to do profiles on us. Our spouses don't know us as well as Facebook knows us. We most likely don't know ourselves as well as Facebook knows us.
And certainly Google. How much information
oh
do they
gosh.
Have?
Yeah. Jeez. And you have no access to it. That's me. That's mine. That's part of me. Mm-hmm. We've given it up for free. The government needs to say you have no right to that information.
Pat, anything in particular on the podcast you want to direct people to today?
Just Pat Gray Unleashed as in general, because it's all, you know.
It's all just great. Fantastic.
It's all fantastic. It's all just brilliant, genius stuff.
All right. Thank you very much.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and you're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. If you like what you're hearing on this show, make sure you check out Pat Gray Unleashed. It's available wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Bill O'Reilly is here to talk about it with us, and as well as all the other things that happened this weekend. There's a lot revolving around the president, but let's start with the moon landing. Bill, how are you?
Good. Can you, just before we get to that, can you spell that boot again?
No, I can't. No, I can't. I really can't. Thank you.
Can you hold up big cards for Beck?
Yes, please, somebody.
Thank you.
All right. So, Bill, you were, what, 68 when we landed on the moon?
I was there.
You were there?
Yeah. I was there. Nobody knew. I stowed away on the Apollo spacecraft.
What is your memory of the day that we landed on the moon?
I don't really have too much of a memory of that.
Seriously?
No, I you know, you got to understand my persona. I have trouble putting gas in my car at the self-service.
Yeah,
you know, when
that.
I have to put the card in and then the nozzle in and then this button. So technology just frightens me. I do remember watching it and feeling proud of my country. That was number one. Number two, I just have no idea how they pull this stuff off.
But wait, then, you were like 15, right?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Okay. It was in the teenage years, which for me were pretty grim, I must say. I led the league in dopey teenage frolicking. Mm. But obviously, this was a big event. Walter Cronkite. I remember I watched his coverage.
Yeah, everybody did.
I liked the mustache on Walter. It didn't have anything to do with his reportage or anything like that. But anyway, you're right. When people don't really understand, number one, how complicated this is, and all you have to do is look at the astronauts who were killed when the spacecrafts exploded and all that. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. And number two, that the technology that is developed along the way has changed everybody's life. So we wouldn't have the drones and the satellites and live shots from here, there, and everywhere. And none of that would be happening unless we had the space situation.
Well, people say, oh, of course, look at Elon Musk. What they don't understand is where we were at the time. We might have, we might be on the moon today. Maybe. But at the time, it took the entire country to rally around it. And quite honestly, many of the things that we have now were from the inspiration of the moon program and the dedication of the educators at the time to emphasize the science in young kids, to try to get them to say, I want to be an astronaut.
Everybody wanted to be an astronaut.
Right.
Everybody's running around. But the real motivator to go to the moon was to defeat the Soviet Union.
Correct.
That's why Kennedy and Johnson and all these guys, they basically put gazillions of dollars into this NASA development, because we feared that the Soviet Union would get space weapons and then they'd be up there and the moon would be communist and, all of that. The political component really led to the scientific achievement, which, of course, most people don't understand. Why are we doing this? Why don't we just take that money and rebuild Detroit? That kind of thing. But I think the overarch for 50 years later is basically your country did this, and your country is the dominant force in the world then. And now,
It's weird, Bill, is
you're proud of that.
You say that, your country did this. And I think many Americans felt that way. They were very proud of the moon landing and still are. I am very proud of what our country did. However, the rest of the world, it was one of those weird events where the rest of the world, yes, they knew that it was America that did it. But they interpreted it at the time as this wasn't just an American accomplishment. This was an accomplishment of mankind, because they still viewed America as a place of dreams where anyone could come and accomplish incredible things. So they saw it, yes, as American, but it was at a higher level. And I think that what still is felt by most people is that was not American, that was humankind.
Yeah, I mean, Aldrin really was clever in the way he marketed that one small step for man and giant step for mankind. Okay, so I have no problem with that at all. I'm not, you know, a jingoist or a nationalist or a chauvinist about America. And I want the world to be proud that human beings were able to accomplish.
Me too.
That's a good thing.
Right.
But I also want the world to recognize the nobility of America.
Correct.
And they don't. It doesn't.
It did at the time. It doesn't
maybe,
now.
But you still had a tremendous Cold War situation, and you had threats all over the place and expansion of communism. And so you did have that back then. But, you know, today the world watches news coverage from America, and the dominant theme is America is terrible.
Yeah. Well, even the moon landing, the social justice warriors are saying this was just a white male event.
Mm.
And we're not supposed to celebrate it because it's a white male event.
Well, I haven't heard that.
Oh, yeah. No,
I don't doubt that it's happening.
Yeah, I'll give you the stories.
But, you know, it folds into the and this is so fascinating to me because this could never happen without the media's consent and approval. It could never happen. The four women, the radical women in Congress, nobody would even know who they are if not for the media embracing them. And so, you know, we're going to have individual cranks and loons forever.
Yeah.
We've always had them. But the difference today is the cranks and the loons, if they disparage the United States, are given a unique platform.
Yeah, they are.
By the New York Times and the Washington Post and NBC News and Tonight.
Yeah.
And that never happened before other than Vietnam. Now, Vietnam was very, very similar. Because the crazier you got, the more famous you got, i.e. Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, the Chicago Seven, the Black Panthers. The nuttier you were, the more anti-American you were in the late 60s, early 70s, the more famous you got. This is a replay of that we're seeing now.
All right. I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. What happened this week, the controversy with Donald Trump and Ilhan Omar and AOC and the, quote, squad. When we come back.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Hey, this weekend's podcast, about 90 minutes, that is just a thrill ride. I mean, it is the fastest roller coaster ride you've ever been on with Gavin McGinnis. I sit down at a round table with Gavin McGinnis. You do not want to miss this. You'll see the truth. You know, he's supposed to hate me. I'm supposed to hate him, et cetera, and all that garbage that was going around. Judge for yourself. And don't miss this episode of Gavin McGinnis. He is a plain-spoken guy and very fun. I mean, hold your sides laughter. Very funny. And at the same time, I don't think you should say that. don't miss it. The podcast this weekend. Get it wherever you find podcasts. We're back with Mr. Bill O'Reilly, who is about to tell us what he thinks is going to happen in the next debate with the Democrats.
Okay. So what I've done on BillO'Reilly.com, your second favorite website to your own, is to basically try to stay ahead of the political story rather than do what cable news does, which to me I find incredibly boring, right, is just to a contrived reaction to contrived events. All right. So here's what I think is going to happen in the Democratic debate 10 days from now. You've got Biden holding a fairly significant lead in the polls. If you go to Real Clear Politics, you get the numbers there. So the challengers, the legitimate challengers, there are only three of them. Okay. There is Bernie Sanders, who's on the fade, and he's never in a million years going to get the nomination, but he's still in play. Elizabeth Warren, who's coming up a little bit and believes that she can get the nomination. And then you've got Kamala Harris, who is quietly assembling a pretty powerful team. However, you've got to knock Biden out of the box. So they crippled him, maybe not crippled, they hurt him last time around on the busing thing with Kamala Harris. Now, Harris gets another shot at him because Harris is going to be on stage with him again at the CNN thing, all right? So it's going to be basically Bernie against Elizabeth in one night and Harris against Biden in the other night. Here's how Harris is going to go against Biden. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Under President Obama for 8 years, there were 3 million illegal aliens deported in this country. 3 million. By contrast, 2.5 years of Trump, 758,000.
That's incredible.
Biden has already been asked about it and says, I have no problem with the 3 million being deported. As everybody knows, open borders is a signature of the current Democratic Party. Harris has got to go into that precinct to say, how dare you, how dare you applaud the deportation of 3 million poor migrants, most of whom were fleeing injustice? How can you possibly do that? That's where Harris is going to go.
What's her record? What's her record in California? She was a prosecutor.
She really doesn't have much of a record as attorney general there. See, because California has never, ever, since Ronald Reagan left the governorship, ever pursued a hard line against illegal immigration, which is why the state now, okay, is dominated by foreign nationals. They've never done it. So Harris can basically say, I didn't persecute anybody. I could have, but as the DA in San Francisco, I didn't do that, and I didn't do that as Attorney General of California. You're the mean guy, Joe Biden. You're the anti-immigrant guy. Okay. Now, that possibly will not happen if the deal is made. Do you know what the deal is, Beck?
Yes, I do.
All right. So let me just restate it. The deal is that the Biden people will say to the Harris people, ease up. If our guy gets the nomination, Kamala is going to be VP. And he's only going to stay for 4 years, all right? And then she takes over. She gets the shot at the presidency. Harris will take that deal because Harris probably can't beat Biden one-on-one in the primary system because people don't really know her. She's radical, and her performance at the Kavanaugh hearing was a disgrace to our justice system. So she probably can't beat him. Plus, Harris has a lot of stuff in her background that the press won't report, but it will come out. And she doesn't want that. She doesn't want to be smeared in that way.
So let me just ask you this, because I saw the egos inside campaigns in the last campaign. And I saw how people that could have made deals didn't make deals because they all just thought, I'm going to win. No, I'm going to win. And I'm more important than that person. And that person doesn't know. I mean, they have to be arrogant enough to run for president. And I mean that in a not in a pejorative sort of way. They have to believe in themselves enough that they are the one to be able to go and do that. And they don't seem to listen to deal making, at least this early in the game.
Yes, there's validity what you say, but the polls are the polls. And, you know, Harris, I don't believe, and I could be wrong, obviously. I mean, there may be a way for her to get some traction, but I'm not so sure. And this is a safe bet for her. This saves her an awful lot of angst.
Yes, it does.
To make this deal. And Biden will make this deal in a heartbeat if he feels that this is going to, you know, stop the attacks on him, which he can't defend. How's he going to defend the deportation of 3 million migrants to a party that wants open borders? How's he going to do it? It's impossible.
And so you
Barack
don't
Obama
think,
couldn't do it.
You don't think Warren and Sanders alone, with just Harris backing away, not defending, but you don't think Warren and Sanders alone could put enough dents into Biden?
Americans aren't going to elect or nominate socialists. They're not.
Right.
Okay, that's so.
I'm not saying they're going to win, but you don't think that they can put enough dents?
No. Look, Sanders is an old white man, and that's his problem right now. Okay, so he's white. If he was a person of color, it would be a different story. All right. Warren is an elderly white woman. That's her problem. And the party, the Democratic Party, is basically marketing itself to younger Americans and minority Americans. So it's Kamala Harris. She's not young, but she's not old.
Mm-hmm.
So Harris checks off all the boxes.
Yes.
But can't beat Biden in most of the states.
Do you think she could beat Trump?
Kamala Harris against Trump?
Yes.
Only if Trump makes a myriad of mistakes and the economy goes south on him fast. I think Harris could probably get on the initial bump about 45% of the electorate to even take a look at her. That's not bad. Harris has far more appeal than Sanders or Warren because they're so extreme. Harris plays this kind of game. She is an extremist. If you really listen to what she wants.
Yeah, she is.
But she doesn't come across that way. All right? But so Harris is the threat. Now you go Buttigieg. Buttigieg is very articulate. He's going to hang around.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not? What else does he have to do? All right?
Well.
Really?
Right.
What else does he have to do?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, CNN wants him, and he'll go there. You'll see him. He'll get a show. He's not going to be a commentator. See, AT&T is going to wipe out everybody at CNN soon because it's such a disaster. And Buttigieg is going to be on there. You wait and see.
So wait. Let me go back to this because I find this fascinating. You say that CNN, they're going to fire everybody there.
Yes. I think AT&T is going to wipe out the whole squad. Now, I'll use the word squad for them.
Right. Okay. So when you say that, does that mean a total rebrand of CNN? I mean, how do they resuscitate this?
They have to. I mean,
but they don't do it by putting Buttigieg in there.
Well, no, you do, because Buttigieg is very charming and articulate. He's not a crazy guy. He may be a crazy guy.
So you're going to fire everybody and then replace him with a whole bunch of other people that are still far left?
That are more reasonable. See, they won't fire Anderson Cooper. You can. He's protected. Okay? But you got to get rid of, and Lemon you can't get rid of either, so you got to move them around. But you've got to inject some youth and some sensibility. And Buttigieg, whether you like him or not, is a very articulate, charming guy. He is.
Hmm.
So he's going to be the centerpiece of what AT&T tries to do with CNN. They're not going to say we're not liberal anymore. They're going to say we're going to get back to our roots of reporting. That's what they're going to say.
Right.
We'll go, yeah, ha ha. But Buttigieg is going to be front and center. So it's worth his while to stay in and run around. Because, A, right now he didn't have anything to do, and, B, he knows he's got the CNN thing in his pocket.
All right. Bill O'Reilly, send me your galley as soon as you can. I'm going on an 18-hour plane ride here in 2 weeks, and I can read it on that.
Where are you going, Beck?
I'm actually going to reunite a mother who thought her daughter was dead. Everyone in the family was killed. The Nazarene Fund, our charity at Mercury One, rescued the mother, moved her to Australia. 3 years after we found her daughter alive, she was a sex slave for 5 years. We just called the mother and said, your daughter is alive, and I get to go bring her
to
her mom.
What a tremendous story. Where was the daughter held captive?
I don't want to give you the details only because I don't know.
Okay.
I think she was in Syria, but I don't know for sure.
Well, very congratulations to you. And I will send you the galley, but you got to keep it to yourself.
I will.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. You can say it's great.
You got it. You got it. You got it. I got it. All right, Bill. Thank you so much. God bless you. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.